It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. If you call Milwaukee County's Free Legal Aid Center located at the Milwaukee County Courthouse, this is what you'll get.
Thank you for contacting the Milwaukee Justice Center. Due to the closure of our AmeriCorps program by the Department of Government Efficiency, we no longer have the staff to answer and respond to your calls.
AmeriCorps is the independent federal agency for service and volunteerism. In April, the Trump administration ended nearly $400 million in AmeriCorps grants, affecting all 25 programs through Serve Wisconsin. That's the state's administrator for federal AmeriCorps funds.
The Milwaukee Justice Center is shutting down its AmeriCorps program this week. Mark Guzman is the program coordinator for the center, and he's here to tell us how the organization is dealing with these cuts. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You've called the AmeriCorps service members at the Justice Center essential, and we just heard they're no longer picking up phones. What are the other immediate impacts to your operations?
Sure. So our program was created as a means to expand equal access to justice to Milwaukee citizens. So we are located in the Milwaukee County Courthouse, and people are able to come down and visit us. And we work one-on-one with clients to help them fill out their state standardized form in issues that are civil cases. So family law, evictions, small claims, things of that nature. And what we had noticed in the past when we were doing research was that a lot of our clients, after they were done meeting with us in our clinics, they weren't filing their legal procedures, largely because they were overwhelmed by the number of different departments that they had to go to within the courthouse. So it's a three-building complex. There's four or five different departments that they have to go to after they, or once they start filing. And so that was kind of overwhelming for people. So we brought on the AmeriCorps program as a way to help guide clients through the courthouse, making sure they're going to all the right departments in the correct order to do all of their legal filings.
You were like navigators in a way.
Yes, that's exactly what we were. We called our AmeriCorps members courthouse navigators.
Looking at the 2023 annual report for the Milwaukee Justice Center, your center worked with more than 640 tenants in the eviction division, fielded more than 2,700 calls to the helpline, assisted 19 people who were ultimately pardoned by Governor Evers in 2023. Who in the community is going to be impacted by these cuts and the reduced capacity at the Milwaukee Justice Center?
I would have to say everyone's going to be impacted by it. On top of our courthouse navigation, we also provided services at an information desk here in the courthouse. So what that did was when anyone who comes into the courthouse, not just clients of the Milwaukee Justice Center, if they had questions about where to go, where they need to be to do certain filings, we were there to answer those questions. And we actually had an information booth and an information desk. Our information desk is still open right now, but the booth is closed. So people that are coming in from other entry points into the courthouse aren't getting that direct service. They'll have to go to the information desk, which is on a different level. But because, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, we don't have our helpline anymore. We don't have that capacity to be able to answer questions for people other than for them to come directly down to the courthouse. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we may not have the resources or services available to help them. So that's really going to make the courthouse a lot busier. It's going to really burden a lot of the different departments here at the courthouse because they might have people that are asking questions that they might not be able to assist with. And just because the AmeriCorps members were able to help really serve more clients at the Justice Center as well, there is the potential that we will have to reduce some of our services or maybe turn people away for services because we just don't have the capacity to meet everyone.
Sounds like the Justice Center's capacity is dramatically reduced. How many AmeriCorps staff did you have?
So there was one AmeriCorps staff member, which was me, but we had 21 AmeriCorps members.
Okay.
So through Serve Wisconsin, they see... they don't see AmeriCorps members as being staff because they're actually providing service to the community. So we refer to them as service members.
The White House has signaled that this is, you know, this sweeping budget cut was out of concerns over waste, fraud, and abuse, that AmeriCorps didn't align with agency priorities under President Trump. What are your thoughts about this reasoning?
I kind of wonder what the reasoning is there because, you know, here at the Justice Center, we're serving people in the courthouse, but AmeriCorps as a whole has provided so many services across a wide range of different needs. We had AmeriCorps members that were building housing for people. We had AmeriCorps members that were doing public health issues. We had AmeriCorps members that were doing disaster relief. So if there's a major storm and there's debris that needs to be cleaned up, AmeriCorps members were going out there and they were, you know, cleaning out that debris. They were building trails for our state and national parks. So a lot of what is unnoticed kind of work that's being done throughout the state, throughout the nation, is being done by AmeriCorps members. And a lot of their work is making the lives of average citizens easier. So it's kind of hard to hear that we are inefficient or that we're not aligning with, you know, administration goals, when at the same time they're saying, oh, we're going to build 1 million new houses within the nation. And now you're cutting funding to programs that are building those houses.
We're talking with Mark Guzman, the program coordinator for the Milwaukee Justice Center, which offers free legal aid to eligible residents. The center expecting to end its AmeriCorps program this week after the Trump administration cut grants in April. Mark, nationwide, about 32,000 AmeriCorps service members lost their jobs due to the federal budget cuts. You work closely with service members. How are they grappling with this sudden change?
Well, it's been very difficult for a lot of them. Some of our members have come from out of state, and so they came specifically to Wisconsin to serve with the Milwaukee Justice Center. Part of the AmeriCorps program is that AmeriCorps provides a living allowance or a stipend to members during their time of service. And so our members who are coming from out of state and they're serving here at the Justice Center, that living allowance and those stipends are funding their ability to be able to have housing and food while they're serving at the Milwaukee Justice Center. And now with these cuts and having to dismiss everyone, they are now having to pay for rent, having to pay for food with no stipends anymore. So that's really impacting a lot of our members. But it is still nice to see that a few of our members, despite the fact that the AmeriCorps program is no longer around, they are still very dedicated to the mission of the Milwaukee Justice Center. So we have had a few of our members that have come back in a limited capacity to volunteer with the clinic.
You've been working in the nonprofit sector, the public sector, for decades. How do organizations bounce back after funding losses like this?
It's very difficult. Having worked with previous nonprofits, the AmeriCorps program was very beneficial because it is a way for nonprofit organizations to build out their capacity to serve their community. In other circumstances, there may not be the funding. There may not be that interest in for volunteers to come and serve with the organizations. At the Justice Center, we're very lucky to have a huge core of volunteers that come in and provide free services to our clients. But AmeriCorps is nice because it has the way to attract people to come and do service through those living stipends and those living allowances. And they also provide educational awards to the members after the end of their term of service. So each member selects a certain number of hours that they want to serve, and then they receive an education award. And that's something that's impacting our members right now, too. A few of our members were in college while they were serving with us, and so they were planning to leave at the end of spring to go back home to their home states. And a few people were just a few weeks short of finishing out their hours. And now instead of getting that full education award, they're just getting a partial education award.
Mark, you are also losing your job, and today being your last day at the Milwaukee Justice Center, what might be on your mind as you exit the building and you're thinking, reflecting back on your experience?
It was funny because I was actually thinking about that this morning. when I was coming in to do this interview with you guys. I really am going to miss the opportunity to work with all of these young individuals. We did a lot of community service outside the Justice Center. We partnered with City Year, which is another AmeriCorps program, to do remodeling of schools. Mm-hmm. We partnered with United Way to do a diaper drive to provide diapers to families who can't afford diapers. And just being able to have all the members together in one spot and see them be so dedicated and give so much service back to their communities, it's really hard that I will no longer have that opportunity or that experience.
When someone has dedicated a year of their lives to serve their country in all of these capacities you've mentioned, and then suddenly they're told what they do isn't essential to the government, how might that affect our nation?
You know, it's impactful because, like I said earlier, it's going to change things that people may not realize are affecting their lives right now. You might go to the hospital and see a doctor who may not have became a doctor if there wasn't an AmeriCorps member there to encourage and push them to go into college and get an education. You'll see a lot more people that may be unhoused because they aren't building that housing. You might see longer wait times to get highways cleared from trees that have crashed into the road after a big storm because there aren't AmeriCorps members to do that disaster relief. So a lot of what AmeriCorps does, when they do it right, nobody really notices that they're doing anything because they're there, they're showing up, and they're getting things done. And now those things aren't going to get done.
Mark, thank you for spending time with us. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Mark Guzman is program coordinator for the Milwaukee Justice Center, which offers free legal aid to eligible residents. The center is set to end its AmeriCorps program this week after the Trump administration cut more than $400 million in grants in April.
Coming up, we visit Door County for a look at international workers in the tourism industry and find out why business leaders are worried about recent changes in visa programs.
We just can't cover all of the needs that our businesses have.
That's next here on Wisconsin Today.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Tourism season is underway in Wisconsin. Door County officials may be more cautious going into the summer because of changes to visa programs, tariffs, and concerns over changes in international tourism.
The area sees more than 2.5 million visitors each year. We're checking in with two business leaders in the community.
Julie Gilbert is president and CEO of Destination Door County, a nonprofit marketing and management organization representing Door County. And Denise Stillman is an owner and operator of Parkwood Lodge in Fish Creek. She's on the Wisconsin Council on Tourism. Denise, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
And Julie, thanks for being with us.
Very much looking forward to the conversation.
Julie, take us into Door County, its workforce, maybe especially over the summer months from Memorial Day to Labor Day. How much do we rely on labor from other countries on various visa programs?
Well, I think it's important because we are seeing labor shortages across Wisconsin, especially in areas such as ours. And we consistently fall short in meeting those seasonal staffing needs. So with the number of visitors that we typically get throughout the season, many of our hotels struggle to recruit enough U.S. workers during those peak seasons. So without reliable access to temporary international labor, it really puts our businesses in a very tough situation.
And Denise, let's visit now the Parkwood Lodge. What does your workforce look like, especially in the busier tourism season?
Oh, we are super dependent on the international students to come and help us out. In the past couple of years, we hope to get a staff of 9 of those students coming from other places. And that's probably leaving a staff of the remaining people, 6 of us, maybe that are, let me figure that out. I should have done the math ahead of time. But there's more of them than us once we're at peak staff time. This year, we're hoping to have 9 students join us.
Denise, have you had trouble this season at all with a lot of changes when it comes to how visas are reviewed?
We have a little bit. There was a lot of talk about that happening, and we were really nervous about it. This year, we've had 2 different people not be able to get the visas, and they were not necessarily because of different politics or different things. The one person changed the number of credits she was taking at school, so as a student, she didn't qualify. And the other person, I believe, had been on the travel program too many times, and they frown upon you coming 3 or 4 years in a row. They leave the opportunities for new students. The difficulty with it is we interview and choose the people way in advance, and then we don't know until the very last minute if they're going to get their visa or not. So like I said, I'll ask for 9, but then all of a sudden we found out in the spring there were 2 we weren't going to have. We really had to scramble with some other businesses and with the InterExchange program to try and backfill in those people who didn't get their visas. And we've been very fortunate, fingers crossed on one more, but we've been very fortunate to fill in the spots on the people that didn't get the visas.
And Julie, are you seeing other businesses having trouble, a little bit of scrambling so far this year?
You know, I think it's really business contingent. And like Denise said, a lot of the businesses are waiting to hear if their students have received their visas. With H-2Bs, some of our businesses did not get the H-2B workers that they had requested because there is a quota or a ceiling that is a mandate through the federal government. So it really depends upon which business you're talking with. We have heard from the majority of our businesses that things seem to be moving forward in a positive way, such as Denise was saying. And you know, they all, our partner businesses work so well together in ensuring that by working together, they can ensure that their hours are covered.
And Denise, we have news since we first called to invite you to join us. Politico reports that the Trump administration is getting ready to pause new interviews for foreign students applying to study in the U.S. That's this J-1 visa we're talking about. Not clear if this is a temporary pause or long-term or what. What does that make you think about as you look forward to maybe not the 2025 season, but 2026 and beyond?
That makes me really nervous. I mean, that would really be, it would be a shame for our workforce, and it'd be a shame for the experiences that the students have while they're in our country.
Julie, people might be listening and thinking, well, come on, can't we hire local folks to do these jobs? Why are we so heavily dependent? What do you hear from business owners in the community if people bring that up?
You know, we have so many people that come in over the season, and I think our businesses hire a tremendous number of locals, but we just can't cover all of the needs that our businesses have, especially during high season.
Denise, you've mentioned the experience that people who are working in Door County at your business have. Can you talk a little bit about that? Where are these students coming from, and where in the world are they coming from, and what kind of experience do they have working through a Wisconsin tourism season?
We're a seasonal business. Our hotel is open May through October, and so I only need to staff half the year, so I'm fortunate that way. But I still, the students, because they are students, have limited windows to when they can come. So we typically try to search out some spring staff and then some people that are going to be able to stay later into the fall. What we have found is Colombia, Dominican Republic, Jamaica, those students work very similar to an American calendar that will come in May, they'll stay through September, and they'll be here to kind of get us started out in the season. Then some of the European countries, we have somebody coming from Uzbekistan and the most of them from Albania. They don't come until sometimes the 4th of July, you know, into the July period. And then they are able to stay through the middle of October when we get really busy for fall colors and fall things, and all the students, American and otherwise, have gone back to school. They're able to stay a little bit longer as their calendar allows.
And then what do they experience here in the United States? Obviously, they're working, and I'm pretty sure they're, you know, it's serious work. But what kind of experiences do they get to have on this seasonal visa?
You know, they when we speak to them directly, what they say they want to gain out of the experience is they want to be able to use the English language that they learn in their school in real conversational time. That's their main goal that they're looking for. And we try to do that. We, you know, even though there may be three or four from the same country or the same language, you know, we encourage them to speak English and teach them English and teach them our customs. We try to do things once a month where the students all get together for a picnic or a barbecue or go to the fireworks and experience real American culture beyond just driving to Walmart to do their grocery shopping. And that's kind of what they're looking for. As the discussions have come up about the J-1 visas and having the kids come here, I see the international agency, the people we work with, making sure that they stress that to us. A lot of the kids come here and they just want to make money. They get 2 and 3 jobs. They really have great economic opportunities here in our area. And we have to kind of make sure we hold them back and say, okay, great, but let's go to the beach one day. Let's go kayaking. And also let's learn to speak our English and do, you know, fun American things.
Now, Julie, there have been efforts in past years to eliminate or limit the exchange visitor program that allows students to get the J-1 visas. Now, obviously, some efforts in the federal government that might limit these. Do you, as an organization, stay in touch with the representatives in Congress about these issues?
Yes, we do. We were actually, as a collective group, Destinations Wisconsin, we talk with our state legislators, as well as going as a group to meet with our federal legislators to really impart upon them the importance of having this cultural exchange program, number one, to support our workforce, number two, because it really does increase that cross-cultural exchange, which we need right now.
And Julie, without these workers from other countries, if, say, a more extreme immigration regime came in and said, hey, nope, you've got none of that, what happens to the economy in a place like Door County or maybe your colleagues over in Wisconsin Dells?
It would be devastating. I think Denise would say the same thing. You know, tourism in Door County generated $51 million in state and local taxes in 2023. We're waiting on 2024 numbers, but that was an increase of 3.2 million over 2022. And overall, it had an impact of 620 million on just Door County's economy. So again, that was up 33 million over 2022. And we have a high number of repeat visitors. And that's really because of businesses like Denise's, where the effort is to really ensure that the J-1 visa students and other employees that work for all our businesses ensure that the expectations and the experiences that our visitors have continue to encourage them to come back. And without the J-1 students and the H-2B visas, if that experience isn't, or their expectations aren't met, you know, we have a real problem.
We're talking about tourism in Wisconsin with a focus on Door County and the impact on policies on visas, trade wars, and more. We've got Julie Gilbert and Denise Stillman with us. Julie Gilbert, president, CEO of Destination Door County. Denise Stillman, owner and operator of Parkwood Lodge in Fish Creek, also on the Wisconsin Council on Tourism. Denise, I want to look at this tourism season now. How is it looking for you? How are bookings at normal levels, higher, lower? What are you seeing so far in 2025?
It's looking really great. Our May, you know, we kicked off right off the bat with the the half marathon that's nearby, a really good holiday Memorial Day season, and our bookings pacing ahead are very strong. So we're seeing very good opportunities for us. Again, you're always nervous. We've heard a lot of things about the international travels and a lot of things with the economy. And we're finding that a lot of people are liking to stay closer to home, to do a 3 or 4 hour drive. They're maybe price sensitive and working through things that way. But in terms of bookings and advanced bookings and having people come and enjoy our area, that's looking really positive.
And Julie, what are you hearing from other businesses? Are they sharing Denise's experience?
Yeah, and I think we know that travelers are prioritizing visits to friends and family, beach trips, and road travel, which we all fit very nicely within. And I think, as Denise said, you know, the economy, people are being cautious, and they are wanting to stay close to home. Gas is down, and I think that positions us very well. Our origin markets are Chicago, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Madison, and we have the experiences that people are looking for, and we make sure that they're aware of it.
Julie, I've seen national numbers showing a decline in international tourists coming to the U.S. for a variety of reasons. But when I look at the data, that's not usually a huge percentage of our business in Wisconsin. So maybe we're insulated from that. Do you see any kind of effect if international travelers aren't coming into the U.S. on us here in Wisconsin and there in Door County in particular?
You know, we get international visitation, but our domestic leisure is really our core focus and our core market. And I don't think at this moment in time it will hurt us, but it certainly is a market that we want to, as a full country, to make sure that we stay behind, because it really is important for national economy as a whole.
Denise, we've seen concerns over the last few years about inflation, and that can affect costs at businesses like yours. Now, a question mark, will tariffs affect inflation or won't they? Have you seen kind of fluctuating up and down costs hitting your bottom line in recent years?
Definitely, yes. And I know the vendors are very cognizant of it. I mean, the supplies, I know I just had to order some linens, some new pool towels. And that particular company I order from is having some experiences there. In this particular case, they know there's going to be a price increase. It was June 1st. They communicated to try and get some things taken care of before we got to those points. And I think a lot of people, that's what we're kind of doing, is looking to see when is it going to go up. I order some soap chemical sort of things that come from a place called Dispenser Amenities in Canada. And we called and we talked to them about the tariffs and about, we had some issues with the freight of getting the liquid chemicals, making sure that they got here. We were able to work things out. So it's something that is definitely a conversation that we're having with people. It's not prohibiting us doing business with those people. And we're just kind of all working through it in the same way.
I want to ask each of you about the unique appeal of Door County and the region in general. Julie, I understand you've previously worked in tourism jobs with Niagara Falls, New York, and with West Virginia's Division of Tourism and Parks. What is it that makes Door County a unique tourist destination?
Door County is a place where everyone wants to visit. They see themselves here in this environment. You come into the county and it's days of yesteryear. There's no major brands. Everything is very unique. We have 19 municipalities that are all very different, and they all have something to offer, be it on Lake Michigan side, be it on the Green Bay side. And people like that feel of nostalgia. And so many people, when they come here, they, you know, we have 5 state parks that are absolutely not only environmentally stunning, but provide a tremendous number of experiences that people want to have, as well as our arts, our culture, and our heritage. We have events that are going on every weekend, really showing the vibrancy of all of our municipalities throughout the county. the culinary experiences that are now in Door County are fast becoming quite sought after, in addition to, you know, the supper club vibe and the fish boil vibe. There are a variety of different types of cultural restaurants now that are truly incredible.
And Denise, you run a business in Door County. I'm guessing you like the area pretty okay. What is it that keeps you there?
Oh, personally, I like the exact same things that the people who visit here like. The outdoor recreation, being able to hike and bike and get outside all four seasons. What Julie was just saying, the food. We have everything from a food truck that you can run down to people with extensive culinary experiences, upscale, lots of different things that we can do. And then the arts. I mean, we are so fortunate. I can walk to the auditorium and hear top-notch entertainment. We can go to Peninsula Players and Northern Sky and see great theater. These are all things that are in our community because we're welcoming the visitors, but we all get to enjoy them while we're here ourselves. And it's just fun. And I just tell people, you know, I have to do that as part of my job. I need to do all those things so I can tell the visitors all about them. So I get to do all that stuff myself.
We'll leave it there. Denise, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Julie, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Julie Gilbert is president and CEO of Destination Door County, and Denise Stillman is an owner and operator of Parkwood Lodge in Fish Creek. She's also on the Wisconsin Council on Tourism. But talking about the impact of changes in federal immigration policies and other concerns for the tourism business in Door County, how about you? If you're an employer or employee, are you seeing concerns with hiring, with job availability because of changes in federal immigration policy? Tell us what you're seeing. You can email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.
Still ahead, Eau Claire travel writers are always on the go, and they have a new guidebook for road trips around the state.
And a road trip doesn't have to be 20 days or 10 days or 5 days. It could be 2 hours. You could get in the car and just go experience a new ice cream place.
The book is called Historic Wisconsin Roadsides. That's next from WPR News. This is Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. It's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Sarah Hopeful with a story about being spontaneous.
When people feel stuck in life, they may seek out new friends or new hobbies. When Jen Rubin of Madison was at that crossroad, she decided to become more spontaneous in a bold way. She shared the following story at The Moth during an open mic story slam in Madison where the theme of the night was fresh. Here's Jen Rubin live at The Moth.
So it took me climbing a glacier to get a new perspective on life. I don't know if it was the altitude or what, but it suddenly occurred to me that my life sucked. I wasn't doing the work I wanted to do. I was still in the Midwest. I hadn't managed to get back to New York City. And I hadn't had a relationship that lasted longer than a few months. But it became clear to me suddenly that the problem was that I was just too passive, that I didn't take any risks, and that from this day forward, I was going to be spontaneous. So I got back home, and I told my friends this. I was pretty excited about the new plan. And they said, you can't actually plan to be spontaneous. Do you misunderstand the word? But I knew I was onto something, and it was going to happen. So fast forward a little while, I started dating someone, and we were together, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months. And we were in the kind of cagey stage of a relationship where, I don't know how I feel about you, how do you feel about me kind of thing. And so I went out for drinks with one of my very practical friends. And as we were talking, she said, it sounds to me like you should just propose to Matt. Matt was my boyfriend. I thought about it and I said, that's a great idea because that really sounds like something a spontaneous person would do. So I am going to propose. And I quickly called Matt and I said, pick me up on Friday, look good. Called an Italian restaurant in town, made a reservation. And then it occurred to me that I had only 4 days to prepare. So on Monday, I tried on every outfit in my closet till I found the one I looked best in. Tuesday, I drove through a snowstorm to get the engagement leather jacket because I figured I had to give him something. And then on Wednesday, I developed sort of my fail-safe plan because I really hoped that with this like new perspective on life, I was going to be bold while I did this bold thing of proposing. So I made sort of like a Burma shave on index cards, and on each index card, I wrote one thing I loved about him, color-coded. And then on the last one, it said, therefore, ... And that would be my cue to propose. So then Thursday, I thought about every possible answer he could give me. I thought there were 9. And so I like kind of wrote out an answer for each one. And then on Friday, I took the day off of work and I rented romantic comedies to get in the mood. And then I realized I couldn't just stick the leather jacket in my purse. So I went and dropped it off early at the restaurant. And I said, could you bring this out with dessert? And they said, sure. What's the occasion? And so I said, well, it's his birthday, which some of you are smarter than I was at the time, because I thought, well, what if he said no, and then I'd be embarrassed in front of total strangers. So anyhow, fast forward to the meal. The dessert comes out, as you can imagine, the candle on the pie, and they're singing happy birthday, and it's one of those restaurants where all the waitstaff sings happy birthday, and Matt's just saying, it's not my birthday. I'm making eye contact with nobody. And then they leave, and then Matt looks at me, and I pull out the index cards in defeat, and I hand it to him, and I'm like, just read it. He reads each card. He gets to the therefore ... I do rise to the occasion, and I do ask him if he will marry me, and he does say yes right away, which is lovely. But I can't really leave it there, because the problem is that I hadn't told my instinct about my new perspective, and my instinct has screwed me my whole life. And so I said, are you sure? Don't you need a little time to think about it? Because that was what I thought he would say. But he was sure, and he didn't need any time. Thank you.
That was Jen Rubin of Madison at an open mic Moth Story Slam in Madison. You can hear the full story and find more information at wisconsinlife.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Sarah Hopeful.
This is Wisconsin Today.
A new guidebook invites us to hit the open road, visit different regions of Wisconsin, and check out hundreds of places off the beaten path. Here's one of the guidebook's authors, Tom Manis, tallying up some numbers and the sheer amount of pushpins on his Wisconsin wall map at home.
We created 11 road trips throughout the state. There's 80 towns and their surrounding areas with over 1,200 recommendations that we handpicked.
Tom Manis and Christy Flick Manis are travel writers in Eau Claire. They've mapped out these road trips that go up the Lake Michigan shoreline, meander through the Driftless region, and take Cranberry Highway through Stevens Point and Wausau with dozens of recommendations for restaurants, parks, and attractions along the way.
The book is called Historic Wisconsin Roadsides. Christy, thanks for joining us.
We're so happy to be here.
And Tom, thanks so much for being here.
You bet. We love coming to WPR.
So, Tom, you know, your guidebook says this is a time machine disguised as a roadmap. And I said, huh, what do you mean by that?
Well, we love finding unique things and historical things. You know, from like our first book, Secret Wisconsin, people know that we like quirky. And so it's really a throwback to when road trips were so popular. The book actually leans toward pop culture more than dates and pictures of old buildings.
You've been on so many road trips. I wonder, Christy, what new places did you learn about in the process of writing this book? What was a discovery that you really loved?
Oh, probably Elvis's roller coaster.
Please do tell.
So we all know from Madison about the memorial over on East Wash to Elvis when he broke up the fight. And that was interesting. That was in our first book, Secret Wisconsin. But we found out that his favorite roller coaster is at Bay Beach in Green Bay. And it was in Memphis. And he used to take all his friends there. And Green Bay purchased it and put it up at Bay Beach. And it is a really fun roller coaster.
It is. It's one of the top wooden roller coasters, one of the top 10 in the country. And one of the things I love about it is that he would pay to close the park down so he and his friends could ride it continuously without being bothered by anyone else.
So it's really a gem in Wisconsin, and it's very reasonable. I think it costs $1.50 to ride it now, but it used to be a quarter.
Well, let's stay close to the water. Your Harbor Towns and Shipwrecks tour takes us from Kenosha to Algoma near Door County. Where do you recommend that we stop when exploring the shoreline of Lake Michigan?
Well, both of us would agree that you start in Kenosha and ride the streetcars, the restored streetcars. That is a favorite. It's a two-mile track, and it goes by, you know, five free museums. Also
on the weekends, the streetcar takes you past farmers markets and street markets. And another place in Kenosha that we absolutely love is the Friday morning fish fry at Oliver's Bakery.
Oh, morning.
Morning.
Right.
And that's Friday morning fish fry.
That's also in our Secret Wisconsin book. And then there's also Sheboygan. One of my favorites is the James Tellon Woodland Sculpture Garden. And it's, you know, it's the Kohler Foundation that, you know, originally restored that. And it's just a beautiful, peaceful walk through the woods, enjoying the sculptures that were made, you know, by the artist. And it's just really peaceful. I love that.
If you really want to get close to a shipwreck, where do you recommend stopping on this particular road trip?
Well, the closest you can get, I think, is Sheboygan, and it's actually across from the YMCA.
Okay.
It's on land, and it's the Lottie Cooper, and you can walk inside it. It's a display. The other is there's Algoma, and then they're all along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely the closest you can actually experience is across from the YMCA in Sheboygan.
You zoom in on Milwaukee's Harbor District and give a shout out to, I think, four restaurants in the city. How did you choose what restaurants to feature in a given community? I mean, in Milwaukee has hundreds of restaurants.
Well, I think a lot of it is we wanted places that have been established and been there for a while. Mm-hmm. The last thing we want to do is put something new in that's maybe won't be there.
In a year or two or a few years, right. And from our Secret Wisconsin book, people will know that we like quirky and unique. And I think Barnacle Buds was one of those places like, hey, this place is really different. And so that was a fun place.
That was unexpected.
It was, yeah.
How important is food on a road trip?
To most people, it's extremely important. To us, not so much.
Why?
When we're on a road trip, we want to be going. And when you stop at a restaurant, it kind of slows you down a little bit.
Our motto is, if the wheels aren't turning, we're not seeing anything. And we're often in places that are away from town, out in, you know, nature, national parks, where restaurants usually are not. And so that really throws your schedule off.
One of our favorite things is going to grocery stores. No matter where we are in the world, that's a place we always stop. Because it's a great place to talk to people, find out what's unique in the area, and it also gives you an opportunity to try different food.
We're talking about a new book detailing road trips all over Wisconsin. Tom Manis and Christy Flick Manis are here. They're the authors of Historic Wisconsin Roadsides. Let's travel through the Driftless region, which is such a sacred part of Wisconsin, so spectacular. You know, what do travelers overlook about this section of the state? What stands out to you about this particular road trip?
The round barns.
Mm.
If you want a road trip, a lot of motorcyclists and car clubs will go and is Vernon County, where the nation's largest, or it's the county with the most restored round barns in the country. So that makes a great road trip.
And it's the rolling hills.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a beautiful region, and it's a great place to road trip through now. They've really restored, well, even Viroqua. They've really made some changes from when I was a child, and it's a fun place to visit.
And it's really important, though, to have a map of this area because there are so many scenic back roads, and there's, you know, you can consider the Great River Road. And in terms of how we should navigate and take in the beauty, I think it lends itself to an actual curated road trip.
Yeah, and a paper map.
Definitely.
So the Dells attracts millions of visitors every year. One of your road trips takes us out of the Dells through Baraboo and Sauk City and Beaver Dam. What places around the Dells would you recommend travelers check out? Because sometimes you can be elbow to elbow with tourists.
Boy, that's the truth. One thing I have a memory of, and I still like seeing it, and we drove by it this morning, was the Badger Ammo Plant. Just the history behind that, I think everyone should see it.
Definitely. But one of the things, too, that's really interesting, you know, before you leave the Dells, maybe hit it first on the way out, is the Bennett Studio with the photographs.
Oh.
The classic, you know, the vintage photographs. That's a recommendation.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah.
You really just want to get out and explore. And in our book, we tell you directions from one town to the next. So we created 11 road trips throughout the state with there's 80 towns and their surrounding areas with over 1,200 recommendations that we handpicked. And each location had a big, huge list, and we narrowed it down and picked the best. So that, you know, and each, of course, you know, each town, I think I mentioned, has direction to the next town.
Mm-hmm.
But we want people to get out and really make their memories, write their own story, go through our book, take the list for each area and say, hey, I want to see this. I want to see it all, or I want to see this and this and this. But we want people to write their story because travel, it really develops people. Even if you're 80 years old, it defines who you are and it creates a new image if you let it.
And a road trip doesn't have to be, you know, 20 days or 10 days or 5 days. It could be 2 hours. You could get in the car and just go experience a new ice cream place or a new park. There's so much to see.
Well, Tom and Christy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it was fun.
That is Tom Manis and Christy Flick Manis. They are travel writers in Eau Claire, and they run a website called smalltownplussize.com. Their new guidebook is called Historic Wisconsin Roadsides.
Be sure to join WPR for the Wisconsin Road Trip Project that launches Wednesday online with an interactive map. It's going to feature 9 curated road trips built around themes like ice cream, baseball, indie bookstores, and birding. That's at WPR.org launching June 4th, and then listen on Wisconsin Life starting June 6th.
Yum. And we want to hear about your favorite road trips. I'm stuck on the ice cream one. You know, they've made awesome memories. Email us about it at wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org for your road trips.
Coming up next week, we'll meet a playwright born and raised in Wisconsin who's put out a lot of material for use as school plays.
And that got us thinking about school theater productions. We want to hear from you. Were you in school plays? What was your favorite memory? Was there a particular play or musical that you loved being in? And what was your role?
Or have you been on the other side of things as a drama teacher or on stage crew? What do you love about putting on school plays? What are the biggest challenges?
Tell us about it. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. www.mwaukeejustcenter.org or call us at 888-642-0232.
I was in the pit orchestra for my school's production of Anything Goes. Kate, any theater memories?
Nothing top of mind, but I remember being in the theater watching a production of Anything Goes. So let's not forget all about those people who are sitting in those seats.
Wisconsin Today producers include Mackenzie Crummy and Trevor Hook.
Our technical directors are Sarah Hopeful and Tyler Ditter.
Tim Peterson is managing producer. Dean Knetter is our executive producer.
Learn more about us at wpr.org/WisconsinToday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to WPR News.